Technorama episode 595, Cinco. Wash your hands in the Cinco. Welcome to Technorama. This is the show.
That's right.
You didn't know that was supposed to be used in a sentence. Now you're going to start titling shows with a challenge exercise for me, aren't you?
Yeah. Now the challenge is on. I see how it is. Okay.
He's just going to put a word in there to use it in a sentence, but not the sentence it belongs.
Rutabaga.
Oh, man. <All right. laughs> We have some really interesting shows coming up. I can see where this is going to go. Do not give Craig license for creativity.
Well, you know why I called it Cinco, right?
It's April 5th.
There's only five more episodes before we hit 600.
I see. So are you going to count down? Is the next one be quattro?
Not now.
Let's do the intro the way the intro is supposed to be done. Welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. I'm Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona. If you're joining us for the first time, thank you very much. We appreciate it. You may have just found us after who knows how long. We've been doing this for about 15 years and loving almost every minute of it.
Oh, there's been a few times I've been pulling my hair out, believe me. But yeah.
Just across the table and way across the country in Rock Hill, South Carolina is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing well. Family's healthy, and I think everything's, for the most part, is pretty good here. I did see a lot more people wearing masks at the grocery store this afternoon when I had to go.
We're concerned that they might just close down the grocery stores.
You think so? Bring that, I don't think it'd go that far. I think it can go that far.
I don't think they could close them. No, I mean, my camera crooked there. But the it's getting pretty desperate. I mean, there were only a limited amount of people allowed in Walmart. Where was that? California? Somewhere. We were watching Good Morning America today. And it's getting crazy. It's going to get crazier before it gets better. I just hope we can go to Dragon Con, Craig. That would be a royal bummer.
I know. We'll see.
It's starting to get questionable, and that worries me. But
we still got a few months before that even comes around, so we'll see. I don't know.
There are... Where is it? Hey, where'd my countdown go? There it is. 149 days. Had to get past a couple of children's wedding anniversaries.
No, so just over 3 months. 149 days?
No, that's more like 4 months. Just under 5 months.
I'm sorry. Yeah, well, it is over 3 months.
I was right. Just over 3 months. Yeah, 149 is just over 90.
Yeah, that's right.
And now you can see, dear viewer, listener, for the first time. Thank you. We have some feedback. Let's roll it.
Letters. Oh, we get letters. We get your letters every day. Mailman, mailman, mail today. Reach right in and pull one out. Those letters. I love those letters.
Oh, boy.
Let's find out what you've got to say.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Mailman.
I already indented that thing.
It was changed.
He's reformatting the show notes as we go. If you're just listening to this, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I was trying to remove the formatting. That's all.
All right, we got a voicemail from a wonderful listener who I don't believe self-identified, but definitely self-isolated. And
thank you, Blaine.
Was talking about our Patreon show. We do have another small episode that we do, very informal, for our Patreon patrons. Thank you very much for that. And this person was letting us know we kind of goofed up in what file got attached to that feed.
And
Google Translate, I was reading the email that came in first. I'm not going to play the voicemail, but it's pretty self-explanatory. And when you go through the audio of a phone quality translation, Google Translate doesn't always come across quite right. Let me read this to you. Hey, I had no idea that Mark was. Except color line month or whatever you told it. Sorry. I'm just calling to let you know that on the parody line needs to paid podcast you posted episode 592 twice and no $593 today when I got $594. Now, I listened to the message. There were nothing resembling dollars in there. It just kind of guessed that these numbers were money.
You know what's funny is I was on my phone and I saw this through email and I'm looking at it and I went, I saw dollar signs and I saw 500 and I went, whoa, whoa, whoa. What?
Somebody donated something? Okay,
here's my attention real quick.
My favorite part comes up. It says, but just let you know just how much I enjoy the show stinks, guys. Keep it up, great work. Enjoy stinks. With the media. Thank you.
And how much enjoy the stinks?
Enjoy with the media. Just to let you know, we do appreciate awesome. Your voicemail for more than one reason.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Comedic reasons.
If you want to have fun with Google Translate, you can reach us on the listener line, 707-530-2428. That's in the U.S. Obviously, use the country code or whatever to plus one. Hey, yes.
I challenge our listeners to call the listener line and flub up the translation.
Say something normal, like read a poem or something, and we'll see what it comes out as. This could be more fun than the Song Masher in some ways.
It can be. We've had fun with this before. Yes.
Okay. Some of you may remember the Song Masher. We put Christmas lyrics through it, and it was just translating to 8 different languages and then back to English and see what happens. Sometimes it didn't even get that far. All right. We also have our question of the week from last week, which we put on social media and said, what no longer exists but should? And we got a lot of great responses. In the Technorama page, we got Enchiritos from Taco Bell. Do you agree, Donna? No, you were more of the taquito. What are the chili cheese burrito? But they had a name, Chilito? Well, they had a name for them before.
Enchiritos?
Enchirito. Isn't that a town just south of the border? A lot of people, including Fred Smith, said common sense.
I'll go with that.
Tim Seelan said the planet Pluto, the dwarf planet Pluto, is not a sufficient substitute. If it's not on Pluto, is it just a sparkling planet? I'm not sure. I got some responses on my share of that. Let's see if I can find some of the more favoritist ones. Manners, duty, honor, common sense, and Kingsbury beer.
Okay.
I do like Gary Lindros's because he said respectful disagreements. And then
no, Gary, you're wrong.
Jack Jaffe came back and says, Gary Lindros, what the F are you talking about? You stupid bleep, bleep, bleep.
You idiot. You have no idea.
Here, I think that deserves this one.
That was so terrible. I think you gave me cancer.
Yes.
Lack of fear when touching doorknobs. Somebody did put in here toilet paper.
Yeah.
What doesn't exist that you really wish and should?
Yeah.
Shaky. Hopefully it comes back. Wow. Fedoras. Dwight Dunlop says fedoras. Fedoras still exist. I wear them. They're fun. The Muppet Show. Ooh, I like that answer.
I could totally go back to the Muppet Show.
Uh-huh.
That's an awesome show.
Well, not too much longer. We're going to be the old guys on the show. You call this a podcast? free dinosaurs. No, Jeremy, no.
No.
Not dinosaurs.
No, no, no. We don't want those coming back. Oh, the McDLT.
The McDLT without the massive styrofoam packaging.
Yeah. Hey, I did like the McDLT when it was out.
My sister says, my sanity. Oh, Lisa says chili pepper chili. Well, you can still get the spice and get a flavor of that old stuff.
Chili pepper chili.
At Little's Chili, what is it? Little's Chili.com? No, they still sell the spices online. Mm. Family reunions, parties, and celebrations with more than 10 people. Michael Slobodnik says rotary phones. Okay. Cursive. Scott wants cursive back? 7-digit phone calls.
Did it really go away? Well, I guess it kind of did. They
I stopped
really
using it when I discovered you don't even need it for checks anymore. You can print on that amount line. Yeah. My signature is about the only thing close to cursive these days.
You know, I never did quite. I don't know. I remember them saying, oh, they don't teach it in schools anymore. I was like, at first I had that knee-jerk reaction like, what? Oh, they should be teaching. And then it's like kind of settled in and went, Why did they teach us that?
Why? It was supposed to be like sophisticated. It's so adults can print some, can write something, and the kids can't read it for a couple of years.
Yeah. Or later.
Honey, what did Dad write? Billy stays in his room all day.
Last and testament, what?
No. Two doesn't belong. Two UICK. What's a two doing in a sentence? Preparing you for algebra.
I did get a couple of responses on my side.
What'd you get?
Common Sense, which I think Fred said that also.
Maybe they're talking about the Thomas Paine publication that he had back in like 1770.
That is it. That was it. Of course that was it. So Clark Lewis, respect for yourself and others. Freedom.
Sorry,
friend C.W. Powell. And Norbert Davis, friend of the show, longtime friend of the show. He said a COVID-19 free world.
Read the rest.
I love my family, but okay.
Thank you, everybody. Nice. We've got another question at the end of the show. We look forward to your responses, and it's a doozy this time. I'm looking for some smart aleck answers out of this next one. So we'll unleash that on you and on social media very, very soon.
So what was the question I put? Oh yes.
Quick note from T. Morris. I was talking to him this afternoon about our upcoming Podcasting for Dummies book. We got our assignments. We're in gear. He mentioned that he is doing it's kind of like a podcast today. He's doing a live stream, and we'll have the URL in the show notes over at chuckchat.com/technorama. And he's doing a fundraiser, and the funding is going for the lunch for kids. You know, with the kids who need, they depend on school programs for their breakfast and lunch. Or No Kid Hungry. Yes. That's what it is. No Kid Hungry. Mm-hmm. And he's raised about $1,400. Now, if you take into account, and he told me this, that every dollar feeds about 10 kids, he's got 14,000 meals out there already, and it's only the fifth. So please, T's a good friend of the podcast. Support him. Go watch his stream, or at least just donate a dollar, and you've given 10 meals. That's pretty good economy of scale, if I do say so myself.
Yeah.
So, because a lot of these kids that aren't in school now or in the summertime, they're not getting the same nutrition they would if they were going to school and getting their breakfast, getting their lunch.
Yeah, not to mention they're not going to school, not in the summertime, but now.
It's totally whacked out right now. Some of these are probably latchkey kids that aren't really doing all the best. So, thank you very much, T. Morris. Again, chuckchat.com/technorama, episode 595. You'll find it there in the show notes when we get those posted real quick.
Yes. No,
let's do the history thing.
All right, bracing yourself.
Clear the title there, helping Donna, because I have the push button thing on my. And this one. On this day in history for April 8th, 2020, this is the 99th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 267 days left in 2020. It was on this date in 1820. That would be 200 years ago today, the Venus de Milo is discovered on the Aegean island of, not Venus, Milos.
Milos. Milos. And 114 years ago today, Augusta Dieter was the first person to be diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease, died.
Why? Oh, okay. Why wouldn't they name it Dieter's disease then?
I don't know why. Maybe. Well.
Yeah, it seems like people should get the naming rights, like Lou Gehrig, but then you get royalties? I don't know how that works. That same date in 19... I'm changing my name to COVID-19.
Good luck with that.
That same date
nobody,
in 19...
Nobody wants you to come over.
Come on over. We're having a pool party.
No, except for that COVID guy.
Wash your hands. The same date in 1908, Harvard University voted to establish the Harvard Business School, HBS.
All right, so Dutch physicist Heike Kamerlingh Onnes.
Don't hurt yourself, kid.
Discovered superconductivity on this date in 1911.
It's like regular conductivity, but it wears a cape. Yeah. That same date in 1959, a team of computer manufacturers, users, and university people led by Grace Hopper meet to discuss the creation of a new programming language. This is 1959. Mm. It would be called COBOL.
Hey, fun fact, I've never coded anything in COBOL.
Me neither. I've seen it. It doesn't look fun. It's very verbose.
No. I think my grandfather did, actually, but... it was also on this date in 1964 that the Gemini 1 test flight was conducted.
And 12 years ago today, the construction of the world's first skyscraper to integrate wind turbines is completed in Bahrain. Happy birthday goes out of this date to 9th Baron de Clifford, English noble and friend of the show, and I think he's a patron too, John Clifford. He was born on this date in 1435 and doesn't look a day over 268.
Wait, that John Clifford?
That John, not our John Clifford. Oh. I had to put it there. It has nothing to do with tech, science, or anything. It says, hey, John Clifford, we're putting him in there.
That's right. And David Rittenhouse, the American astronomer and mathematician, was born 288 years ago today. And you know what? He does not listen to the show.
I don't think so. August Wilhelm von Hofmann, the German chemist and academic, was born on that same date in 1818.
And Canadian-American actress, producer, and screenwriter, co-founded the United Artists, Mary Pickford, was born on this date in 1892.
Also born April 8th, 1911, American chemist and academic, and Nobel Prize laureate, Melvin Calvin.
I lost my place.
Croatian physicist.
Okay, Croatian physicist, philosopher, and writer, Ivan Supic, was born on 105 years ago today. Excuse me.
Winifred Asprey, American mathematician and computer scientist, was born on that same date in 1917. Oh, bad time for Spanish flu to break out.
And Russian Estonian astronomer Grigory Guzman was born on 103 years ago today.
Also turning 82 today is American mathematician, statistician, and lawyer Mary W. Gray.
Everybody can't be perfect. American director, producer, and special effect artist Douglas Trumbull was born 78 years ago today. Or is 78 today, excuse me.
Oh, he was born 78 years ago today? That kind of is the same as being 78.
The last several lines were like, was born 78.
It is a random, and I've got about six different phrases it pulls from. Also born on that, it just makes sure it's not repetitive. There is a check to make sure you don't get the same thing twice in a row.
Right.
Also born on the same date in 1966, American actress, director, producer Robin Wright. As you wish. Yeah.
An American computer programmer and engineer, Mark Spencer, is 43 today.
Also turning 40 today is American actress Katie Sackhoff. Starbuck is 40. Wow. Amazing. Yeah. Listener birthdays this week for April 8th through 15th include just one.
One?
Just one.
Wow.
April 14th is Danny Harnish's birthday. And that's the way it was on this day in history for April 8th, 2020. I think the band is just going to keep going for another minute or so, but I want to tell you.
Of course they are.
Craig has updated the birthday calendar. We have moved away from, what was it? Wiki paint, wet paint, something.
It was a wiki. Wiki paint. Oh, what was that? Wiki.
I can't remember.
I can't even remember the name wiki of it. Foundry? Well, that was quick.
Something Foundry.
Wiki Foundry. Yeah. It was some service we've been using. It was a wiki we've been using for a long time.
But it's starting to get a little long in the tooth and not the most user-friendly. So. Tell them what you built.
So if you just, I got a Google form. So if you go click on the birthday calendar link on our website.
Or go to chuckchat.com/wiki. We wanted to make it really easy, but it's not a wiki anymore.
Yeah. Well, I figure people might be listening to old shows and I tried to go to wiki and it wouldn't go there. Right. So I was trying to, anyway. So if you go to /wiki or go to the birthday calendar link on our website, it'll take you right there and just fill out the quick form and away you go.
Yes, very easy to fill out and very easy for us to copy and paste. Yeah, that's the way it was on this day in history. How's that?
Yay.
We know how to vamp.
Yeah.
What we don't know is which button to push for this next news segment. Well, let's do this one.
Good news, crybabies.
That'll work.
Good news, crybabies.
Oh, I'm just going to start already thinking about Dragon Con. Doing that. All right, this is from Forbes. Yes, we get news from real news sources sometimes. starts out, "If you build it, they will come." We're not talking about baseball. That's not one of the most famous lines from film history, courtesy of 1989's Field of Dreams, but it also best describes a Texas cinema circuit's initiative to turn its closed movie theater into a drive-in in the theater parking lot. Last weekend, Lone Star State-based Evo Entertainment distributed its drive-in concept at its multiplex in Schertz, Texas, providing movie fans an out-of-the-home outlet to watch recent Hollywood blockbusters. To say the first weekend was a success was an understatement, as every show of Spider-Man Homecoming since it opened on Friday has been sold out. In fact, every ticket through Tuesday has been sold, and the theater is planning an additional showtime later this week. Every evening, movie fans can park their cars in the theater parking lot and enjoy a film from the COVID-safe confines of their automobiles. Screenings are free, and patrons can order food from the theater's kitchen. How does the food get to them?
I think somebody runs it out there, I guess.
And now they're being exposed.
So maybe they got a mechanical arm to reach over there. I don't know.
This is a great, great idea, and it's sad to see that a lot of drive-in movie theaters are gone, because this could revive them so well.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. Last year, Harrison and I were in Canada in the summertime, and we were at a convention. It was a video game convention he wanted to go to, and we went. And one evening, I saw that Spider-Man Far From Home was playing at a drive-in mm-hmm. near there. So we took the rental car and ran over there and watched the movie. We had a great time. That was a lot of fun, except for, you know, mosquitoes, but aside from that, it was fun. We had a great time kicking back and watching the movie in the car. So,
well, before it gets too warm, I have a thought of taking our projector and shining it on our garage door and let the neighbors in the cul-de-sac kind of watch. I got to figure out the audio part yet, but
as long as they stay away.
Right. Yeah, you put your lawn chair in the middle of the cul-de-sac or something. I don't care. Mm-hmm. Or sit on your part of the sidewalk, as long as they can hear.
Well, that should be fun. I thought it was funny. They were playing Spider-Man Homecoming on the wall, and that's what made me think of Harrison and I going to the city Far From Home.
That's a great idea.
That was really cool, and I know there's one near here, but I wish there were more. There used to be one. I remember seeing it as a kid when we would drive down Cherry Road, which is the main strip here in Rock Hill, mm-hmm. and I remember seeing the screen, you know, as a kid, like the tip of the screen is
so you can see just the top, or as you're driving down the road, you kind of guess. What movie are they playing?
I don't know. Yeah, it was awesome.
Donna and I went to a few of them while we were dating. I don't think we've been to one. It's been a long, long time. It's probably been close to 30 years since we've been to a drive-in theater.
They're around. You have to kind of look for them.
Okay, so there are still a few.
There is a few around.
I'll bet they're doing really well right now.
Yeah.
Because it's the only form of safe entertainment in large numbers. All right. Next article.
So, if the last few decades of progress in artificial intelligence and molecular biology hooked up their love child like a class of life unlike anything else has ever lived, might resemble a dark speck doing lazy laps around a petri dish in a laboratory at Tufts University. So Douglas Blackingston is a biologist, and he pointed to one of the most, a little wider than a human hair. I'm sorry. He pointed to one what? Oh, one little life, what? I guess. It was a little bit wider than a human hair. Squint, and you could just tell it was moving. Under the microscope, the blob was racing up and to the left. He's a lighter, Dr. Blankenstein said, then caught himself, it's a lighter color. Strictly speaking, these life forms do not have sex organs. These are little xenobots. They're virtual creatures brought to life. They don't have sex organs, stomachs, brains, or nervous systems. The ones under the microscope consisted of about 2,000 living skin cells taken from a frog embryo. Bigger specimens, albeit still smaller than a millimeter wide poppy seed, have skin cells and heart muscles that will begin pulsating by the end of the day. These are all programmable organisms. I'm having trouble reading tonight. These are all programmable organisms called xenobots. Do what now?
Let me know if you want to tap out.
Yeah, I'm out. No, the creation of which was revealed in a scientific paper in January. They are named for their African clawed frog, Xenopus livius, which supplies all of their cells, and the suggestion encapsulated in prefix that some strange alien is at work. So the Xenobot lives for only about a week, feeding on the small platelets of yolk that fill each of its cells and would normally fuel embryonic development. Because of its building blocks or living cells, the entities can heal from injury. Well, if they only live for that long, what kind of injuries are they going to hit? I don't know.
Are they running into each other?
Bonk. Yeah. I hit the side of the Petri dish. So even after being torn almost in half. Oh, okay. There you go. But what it does during its short life is discreted by not by the effiable frogginess etched into its DNA, which has not been genetically modified, but its physical shape. So the xenopods come in many shapes, all designed by roboticists in the computer simulations using physics engines, of similar to those in video games like Fortnite and Minecraft.
Okay.
That really instills some confidence there. Xenobots with a fork or snowplow-like appendage from the front can sweep up loose particles overnight, depositing them in a pile. Some use legs of sort to shuffle around the floor on the dish. Others swim using beating cilia, or link up blobby appendages and circle each other a few times before heading off into separate directions. And they've got pictures of them. You can see them kind of in there. They look like little tadpoles or stuff.
Yeah, so, we've got some animations and pictures going on the screen right now.
Yeah, there's an animation of them. You can see some of them. It looks like they're all running in a circle. And
yep.
It's like, you know, like you'd see a molecule on something and it goes over to another one.
So it's a few cells grouped together but programmed to do something specific? I'm not sure what the purpose of these things actually is. I mean, they said, we can put a snowplow on the front and make it pile up stuff in the corner. It's like, great. Is that going to take over my room?
I think at this point, it's just experimentation. Yeah, just trying to figure out. I mean, you can... Okay.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I guess at some point, maybe they're developing nanobots.
Xenobots sounds like a Saturday morning cartoon. So maybe they'll get their own line of action figures. Who knows?
Oh, Xenobots.
Yeah, they just hand you a bunch of poppy seeds. There you are.
I love Xenobot Prime.
Play with the Xenobots all afternoon, kids. The little black dots. Me, I'm attacking. I'm injured.
Yeah.
We can make a buck off anything. All right. Yeah. From CNN. Once crowded city streets are now empty. Highway traffic has slowed to a minimum and fewer people can be found milling about outside. Global containment measures to combat the spread of coronavirus have seemingly made the world much quieter. Scientists are noticing it too. I don't know. Donna and I went for a ride yesterday morning just to get the car out, you know, because it hadn't been driven in a couple of weeks. And you're supposed to, you know, get your vehicle running every once in a while.
Yeah, sure.
We still saw a fair amount of traffic for a Sunday morning or Saturday morning.
Oh, yeah.
It was yesterday morning, right? Saturday morning. It was only like 8 a.m., 9 a.m., and it was pretty darn busy on some of the interstates. I'm like, really? That was a little disappointing.
Similar experience. I would say that I could tell the traffic is a little bit lighter in town, but I wouldn't say it's like, you know, I'm not popping across town in like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Nothing like that. But it's like lighter, I can tell.
Well, around the world, seismologists are observing a lot less ambient seismic noise, meaning the vibrations generated by cars, trains, buses, and people going about their daily lives. And in the absence of that noise, Earth's upper crust is moving just a little bit less.
Wow. Okay.
Thomas Leacock, a geologist and seismologist at the Royal Observatory in Belgium, first pointed out this phenomenon in Brussels. Brussels is seeing about 30% to 50% reduction in ambient seismic noise since March, around the time the country started implementing school and business closures and other social distancing measures, according to Leacock. That noise level is on par with the seismologists would see on Christmas Day, he said. So Christmas Day, a lot of times people are just staying inside and being with family and whatnot, not much travel. So we're getting a whole bunch of Christmases. Yay, more toys.
That what it is?
Yeah. I'm also hearing things like because there's less road noise from cars and motorcycles and whatnot, birds are singing more. The bird song has been going down and bird populations have been decreasing dramatically since the 1970s. And they're saying, you know, you go outside and I don't have any hard empirical evidence, but anecdotally, it's a lot noisier in the morning than I remember.
Yeah. And I wonder, you know, I have seen a few stories and I honestly didn't go follow up to find the actual truth, but I've seen some stories where they said that, you know, pollution is down to a certain degree and other phenomenon. Like, I thought it was strange when I saw the title of this, that the earth was vibrating less. I never really thought about it.
Vibrating because of all the action. A lot of these are going to be temporary because when society gets back on its feet, we're not going to fix global warming by keeping people inside for a couple of months.
No, but I thought we talked about the other article the other week about wildlife walking back into some areas because there's less foot traffic or just traffic in general. Just thought it was interesting how short of a time frame things start to creep back in, you know, or make a difference. Like,
oh, nature is resilient without us. Trust me.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. It'll be here a lot longer than we are.
You check out like an abandoned house after 5 years, there's trees where trees didn't used to be.
You know, that's funny you bring that up. I've seen several houses here in South Carolina and various places where it looks like it's a decent looking house, but it's abandoned. And then like after just a few years of just nobody really taking care of it, it starts to decay and you see things growing on it. And it's funny how nature just kind of takes it back over over time. But you go, wow, I'm just trying to figure out the process or not process, but because somebody being in the house as opposed to them not being in it, what makes it so things take it over so quick?
You're maintaining it. So yes, you're maintaining the roof, the windows, the exterior of the house need to be maintained. So nobody living there. And I mean, plus cutting the grass, if you've got grass. You know, it doesn't take much for seeds to blow into the landscaping, to the grass, to the cracks in the sidewalk, and stuff grows up. So, you know, if you've got a tree that's growing right next to your house, I mean, like touching the house when it starts life, it's going to wreak havoc as it gets bigger.
Oh, yeah. So, well, I have seen several houses where you can see trees grew up right beside it and kind of start taking it over. Yeah. No, I mean, I'm not oblivious to that. I'm just saying, all the things, just trying to calculate all the things that come into play when there's not somebody maintaining as opposed to they are. You know, that's what I'm getting at.
Alrighty, we have one more. We got space porn. You get the space.
Yeah, let's go back to the future.
You get the space noise. I mean, story.
The space noise? All right, so here we go. So NASA tests this giant 21-foot mirror on the James Webb Telescope for the first time in simulated zero gravity as it tries to find a successor to the Hubble, which I think is kind of interesting how they simulate zero G.
They don't put it up in the vomit comet like the rest of us go?
Yeah, they go up and down. You know, somebody, I would be the one to drop it when the gravity kicked back in. Oh!
21. You're not carrying a 21 from here.
No. Hey, well, anyway, so NASA is
inching. It's not a
single
piece of glass either. It's like the Keck, where it's made up of the hexagonal segments.
Yeah, it kind of folds out. And you can see an animation of that in here. But NASA is inching forward in its plans to launch a successor to the Hubble telescope. In an unprecedented step, NASA tested a giant 21-foot mirror on its James Webb telescope that is designed to observe a range of frequencies not currently seen by the Hubble. In the test, NASA simulated one of the conditions the telescope will enter in space, including zero gravity, with the mirror, which is actually 18 hexagonal mirror segments fully unfurled. Like I said, you can see some pictures in there. Mm-hmm. While the latest test marks a step forward in the craft, the telescope has long been delayed and over budget. Government Accountability Office reported earlier this year cast doubt on whether NASA was going to be able to meet its launch date slated for 2021.
And I'm sure the current situation isn't helping their schedule any.
Oh, no. Oh, I'm sure it's not. So anyway, you can go see all these pictures on here. It's an impressive looking piece of equipment. I hope they get it up there.
Well, there's a diagram that's side by side. The Hubble had a 2.4 meter or 7.9 feet in diameter. This thing is massively larger. It's 6.5 meters. It's over twice the diameter.
It's crazy. Yeah, it's amazing.
Which means a lot more visibility. But I want that thing up. Let's get that into space.
Yeah. I'm ready to see what it's going to come up with. Anyway, you can go look and see some the pictures we're talking about and get some more information on the James Webb Telescope.
All right. Normally we take a break, but let's soldier right on through by
move on through.
I can't see anybody because I'm using a watch party, but I do see that John Miller Jr. did put some comments in, sir. Thank you very much. Anybody you see aside from that?
I see Amelia or Amy Bowen.
Yeah.
She wants to say Amelia. I like Amelia, hey, but Amy Bowen. John Miller Jr., and I know there's some other people watching because I see them on there, but yes. I can't see their names.
That's all right. Thank you very much for watching. We are just having fun hanging out, talking nerd stuff on a Sunday night. You can join us on Facebook. 9:30 Eastern time is when we do this, so set your alarms or subscribe. Put a notification on the Technorama page, Technorama podcast page over on Facebook. Want to make that distinction. All right, we have Remember When. We got something to it's another NASA thing. We love our NASA stories.
This is the one I was talking about, going back to the future.
Yes. So NASA is going to bring back its iconic worm logo to mark the return of human spaceflight. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you will shortly. NASA originally planned to announce that it was bringing its iconic, and this is quoted, worm logo back on Wednesday, but the agency was afraid people would take it as an April Fool's Day joke. There were a lot of things released on April Fool's that people thought were a joke that weren't.
Yeah. Us, our show.
Happily, it's... and we didn't do an April Fool's. How about that? That was our joke on you. No joke.
Yeah.
Okay. Happily, it certainly was not. The worm has returned, and that's no joke. The space agency said the retro-looking logo will be stamped on the side of a Falcon 9 rocket that will carry astronauts to the International Space Station as part of the SpaceX Demo 2 flight, presently scheduled for mid to late May. NASA says there's a good chance you'll see the logo featured on other missions, too. The change was driven by space agency's administrator, Jim Bridenstine, who told Ars Technica he is a huge fan of the worm symbol. Quote, I thought making the achievement of returning human spaceflight to American soil and bringing back the worm would be a fitting tribute to the historic achievement, he said. I'm very appreciative of the partnership with SpaceX and the willingness to work overtime to make this happen. NASA has only ever had two logos. The original meatball, which was designed by an employee named James Modarelli?
The one with the little swoop in it?
Kinda. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I think we've got a picture of that as well. The space agency, they did that in 1959. The iconic logo's round shape represents a planet, and the stars represented space. Duh.
Yeah.
And the red V-shaped wing represents aeronautics. And the circular orbit around NASA represents space travel. Okay, there's a lot of representation in there, but you know, National Park Service has their stuff too. In 1976, the agency sought to move beyond Apollo into the, quote, modern era with its nascent space shuttle and created a new logo with NASA spelled out in its unique type style. With this update, NASA sought to express a feeling of unity, technological precision, thrust, and orientation toward the future. That wasn't intentionally supposed to be Carl Sagan, but kind of turned into it. However, this worm logo was nevertheless retired in 1992 as NASA reverted to the meatball under the leadership of then-administrator Dan Golden. So now, apparently, the space agency will use both logos going forward. NASA will continue to employ the meatball as its primary symbol, but the agency says It's assessing how and where the worm will be used. Well, I think it just fits better on a rocket because it's a longer logo.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, whereas a patch, you know, you could do either one on that.
Or t-shirts.
So they do have a third logo that's actually, it's not official logo. It's more of a seal that says National Aeronautics and Space Administration, USA, around the outside. And then it's got a similar meatball logo. Looks more like the sun wearing some kind of crazy visor. But
okay. I love the two that they've got. I love the worm one. And I never heard it called the worm one.
But as soon as you say it, you know exactly what it is.
I mean, yeah, I was like, worm? I went, oh, yeah, I guess so.
The letters are kind of wormy.
I also didn't think of calling that first one the meatball, but okay, I get it.
I've heard the General Electric, GE, their logo is called the meatball.
Oh, okay.
That's been like forever. But
I think there's some meatballs that run GE, but...
Careful. All right. Speaking of meatballs, let's talk about our patrons.
What a segue.
That was terrible. I'm not sure what we did. But thank you. Thank you very much, dear patrons. We owe this show to you. And in return, we give you special content and a shout out. And we have a couple of new shout outs to include this week. Actually, one's an upgrade. So I'm not sure how we'll do that. Maybe it'll be louder or a reverb or something. Thank you to Alexis Durand, Amber Elstad, Amy Bowen, Avner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Brian Brown, Chris MC, Dandy Man Coyer. Danny Mortensen is our new patron at the top level. The guy can't give any more unless he gives us his credit card. So thank you very much.
Well, you know, anything's on the table.
For as little as a dollar a show, and he went right past that to Triple Dog Dare. The Dean Jensen, Denise Inglis, Gary Lindros, Harold McKinstry, John Clifford, John Noble.
That John Noble?
That's our upgrade patron. Thank you very much. Jorga Schrauen, Christina, Kyle Nishioka, Leon. We heard from Leon in an email this weekend. Thank you very much. Mark Kilfoyle, Mike Wills, Night Gig Studio, Saturday Morning Media, Stephen Wetchy, and Steve Therian. Thank you, everybody. Because we are probably at our highest expense point right now as we do this transition to the new website and get everything transferred over.
Yeah.
We're paying for two hosts for a little while. Yeah. So,
and we're also paying through the nose for toilet paper.
Your patron dollars are not going for toilet paper, just to make this clear.
There's a joke in there too, but I'm not going to go there.
If you can afford toilet paper... Good on you. We hope you can spare a dollar a show, and we'll give you special content.
If you can
content.
Cut back on two sheets a day, you can afford to give us something.
Because you're not going to Starbucks anymore. Maybe that's why people are giving it to us. I don't know.
Right.
Go to our Patreon page at patreon.com/technoramapodcast, or you can find a link, of course, at our website at chuckchat.com/technorama. Thank you. Thank you very much, everybody. You are all rock stars.
Yes. Hey, by the way, I do have something I stuck in the geek library.
I see that.
Yeah. Just real quick, because I thought the show looked a little top heavy, so I wanted to make sure I put some in here. Anyway, I was looking for some books to read, to maybe not just for fiction, but something, you know, to try and enrich myself a little bit. And I saw this article. It was, it said six must read books that will make you much smarter. Well, I don't know about that, but what remains to be seen. But I started reading Daily Rituals, actually doing the audiobook, and that was fascinating. It's like all these little, it's a bunch of chapters, but they're all on the audiobook. It's only like a couple minutes for each one. And they run through what were the daily rituals for some of these people, like Thomas Jefferson and I don't know, you name it. There was Bach, Mozart, lots of different names like that. Benjamin Franklin.
They didn't ask me for my daily ritual.
Famous people, Chuck.
So they didn't ask me for my daily ritual.
Yeah. Wait till they go to the daily rituals, how podcasters work.
I don't even have a Wikipedia page yet. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. But it was fun. I noticed that so far I've gotten about halfway through there. And I've noticed a lot of them got up early and just went straight to work, you know, like 4 in the morning or 5 in the morning without the distractions or noises in their homes, but the other people would be up and stuff like that. There was, that's a lot of them right there.
Check. That's me.
Yeah. I kind of do the same thing. You know, I get up. I don't know if I go to work right away, but after I sit around and have coffee and stuff, and I start doing some stuff.
You start by sitting around and having coffee. That's a ritual. Not saying it's the most productive ritual.
I get my thoughts together and I start, I'm either go work out first thing in the morning or and get that out of the, I like to work out early
sure.
so I can get it out of the way and then I can move on with my day.
Yep. Yep.
You know, because I know at work, once the train leaves the station, there's no stopping it really. It's like
no
on track until
not till like 9 or 10 at night. And then that's the downside of working from home is like work just never seems to stop. You can't leave the office. All right. Well, aside from
that late.
Daily rituals, what else you got?
I was going to say rituals is a good one.
Give the full title and artist so they know how to find these things.
Yeah. So Daily Rituals, How Artists Work by Mason Curry. Number two is Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. Let's see. The third one is The 4-Hour Chef, The Simple Path to Cooking Like a Pro, Learn Anything and Living the Good Life by Tim Ferriss.
Okay.
Which I'm actually interested in that because I do like cooking and we'll see. The Art of War by Sun Tzu. Thinking Fast and Slow. I do the second part there. By Daniel Kahneman, and A Short History of Nearly Everything. It's like the opposite of Dr. Hawkins' book.
A Brief History of Time.
Yeah. This is, didn't he hear History of Everything? Yeah, this is nearly.
Well,
who was that?
Was that a follow-up?
Yeah, I think it was.
Okay.
Anyway, so Bill Bryson. Anyway, I'm interested in go checking out his books. I'll have the link to the article in the show notes.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Good stuff. And our question of the week for you, told you it's going to be a doozy. You wake up, it's 2050, and we're not talking about like 10 minutes to 9 p.m. Okay. The year 2050. What do you Google first?
How did they fix this COVID-19 thing?
Why have I been asleep for 30 years? What happened to Google?
Bing everywhere?
you Google what happened to Google. Now think about what the internet looked like 30 years ago. There wasn't even a web in 1990. Okay? There was no HTML. There was no World Wide Web. It was a completely different thing. So just try and stretch your imagination out another 30 years.
Yeah. I mean, even the first web pages in around 94, 95, it looked
dull.
You know, by today's standards, it looks like, hey, here's your nice fancy avocado toast. Here's your white bread toast. That's about the difference.
Just go to Craigslist and you get an idea of what the internet looked like in 1994. Does it still look like that?
Go to the Wayback Machine. There you go. Go to the Wayback Machine and look at Microsoft.com.
Oh, yeah. And a lot of companies just wanted to put a picture of their building on the front page. We were one of them at one point.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff like that. Well, nobody really knew how to market themselves.
Except
until marketing got involved.
Some had the flaming logos. There was an IBM commercial. It was like, the logo's on fire. Yeah, it's a flaming logo thing.
I always love that under construction guy.
The funny thing, it didn't even look like a proper shovel.
No, but it looked like a construction sign, like a diamond when you'd see, but little guy's just shoveling bits.
Or the page counter. The page counter right at the bottom of the page. Oh, man, we're having way too much fun. We're having our own Wayback Machine
Five
here.
Five people have seen this page? Wow.
I'm an early adopter.
Page counter, I forget.
The World Birthday Web was another one that was early.
Hey, let's go see what Facebook looked like in 95. Whoa,
it wasn't there. Darn. Yeah, it was.
Hey, you can go see what Technorama looked like
in 2005. Oh, please don't.
No. Don't.
Oh, sheesh. Wait, it looks the same as it does today.
Oh, maybe. What are you saying?
It's just the archive.org just has this big line. There's no tick marks on it.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, that's right.
You did make an update because now you have a menu option for the birthday page.
Birthday calendar,
yes. Okay, that brings us to the end of the show. Boy, it has been unusual today, hasn't it? Thank you very much, and I hope we brought a little bit of levity into your lives and make it just a wee bit better from this crazy time. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. You can find us over at chuckchat.com/technorama. You want to get in touch with us, 707-530-2428. See what kind of crazy message you can leave for Google Translate. Has to be a legitimate sentence, and see how bad it can get mashed up. Just don't tell us that the show stinks.
See if it's as bad as me reading the On This Day in History.
Or any other article for that matter. Right. Where is it? There we go. Thank you very much. And as always, Craig, how about that big, beautiful worm logo binary high five?
101.
Thank you, everybody. Stay safe. Wash your hands.
Yeah, no face plant. Palm plant. No, face palm. Something like that. Yeah.